I want to invite you just to pause for a moment and think about your dream job. I'm hoping that you don't currently have your dream job, but if you do, imagine that job. Just imagine your dream job. Think about the process of applying for that job. You know what's going to come up, the questions that they'll ask. One will inevitably be, what is one of your greatest strengths? Or what sets you apart and qualifies you for this important role? Think about what your answer might be. What attribute or characteristic might you share? I want to ask you to just pause. Think about that. And now just tuck it away. We're going to come back to that in a little bit. Today, as Mark said, we're continuing with our series on the cast of Christmas and taking a closer look at Mary. Mary tends to be either seen as an icon to be revered, the way our Catholic or Orthodox brothers and sisters consider, and some of us in the Pentecostal traditions may have rejected her altogether. But today, as a person raised with a Catholic background, I've kind of lived out that tension through much of my life. And so when I was given the opportunity to share this morning, I really appreciated the opportunity to dig a little bit deeper into my own personal understanding of who Mary is and what she has to teach us about what it means to follow Jesus. I also feel quite nervous, just in general, but also I feel that Mary carries a lot of emotional and theological weight for people. So I both don't want to over-idealize her, but I also don't want to kind of flatten her into a character that we keep kind of at arm's length. And while I realize that Mary's experience is quite unlike anything any of us will have ever experienced or will ever experience likely, it's also a story that I have not personally resonated with. In fact, I might more relate to her, who's referred to as her relative, sometimes cousin, Elizabeth. For years, my husband Mark and I struggled with infertility and are now, gratefully, parents to our 8-month-old son. But I related to Elizabeth and her journey, where she also was childless for many years and then was gifted a child at her old age. I am older than I look. there's a quote from an author called Scott McKnight, and he writes in his book, The Real Mary, this: "While Mary's story is that of an ordinary woman, it's also the story of a woman with an extraordinary vocation, being mother to the Messiah, who learned to follow this Messiah, Jesus, through the ordinary struggles that humans face. In this sense, Mary actually represents each of us, both you and me, in our call to follow Jesus." That line that Mary represents each of us kind of stopped me. It made me realize that I had actually been keeping Mary safely in the past instead of her teach me something new about Jesus now. So my hope for us this morning is that we can reflect on her example and what it can teach us about following Jesus today. So let's look in Luke chapter 1, verses 26 to 38. These verses actually kind of come right after a story that I was referring to earlier, when the birth of John the Baptist is being foretold. The angel Gabriel appeared to a man named Zechariah, who was a priest. He said, "You, in your old age, are about to have a child." Zechariah was quite skeptical, understandably. And the angel, in fact, decided to make him not able to speak until his baby came, which I'm sure was not very helpful for his wife. But needless to say, that was that's the story that kind of precedes this. So let's look, pick up here in Luke 1:26. "In the 6th month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent an angel to Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. the angel went to her. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. Now, I find this part of the story to be quite interesting because unlike the story of Zechariah, which I would encourage you to kind of take a look at later on, the text actually simply tells us a few things. It tells us that Mary was from Nazareth, that she was a virgin, and she was pledged to be married. So not a lot to go off of. Based on the context of the time, we know that girls were typically married quite young. Many scholars would put Mary somewhere in the age range of 12 to 16. For those of us in the Western world, that's a concept that's a bit hard to wrap our heads around, although that is the reality for many in other countries around the world. So we knew she was quite young. We also know that outside of Israel, Nazareth wasn't actually quite well known. Some argue, actually, that the gospel writers needed to refer to it as Nazareth of Galilee so many regular times because people didn't actually know where it was. So that might be like us when we're talking to people outside of Ontario and saying, "Oh, I'm from Hamilton," or "I'm from Burlington." And you might say, "I live in Toronto," or "It's close to Toronto." And people outside of Ontario would likely know Toronto more than our towns. We also know that Mary was quite poor. Doesn't say here, but later on in the Gospels, Joseph and Mary go to the temple and bring an offering. And there they bring two turtle doves, or maybe two pigeons. And it's said that people were allowed to bring those when they couldn't afford to bring a lamb. So, all of this to say, we know very little about Mary, but we do know that she was simple and a young girl from a small town. So let's continue reading here in verse 30. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son. You are to call him Jesus. He will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." The angel answered, "The Lord will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age, and she who is said to be unable to conceive is in her sixth month, for no word from God shall ever fail." "I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." And then the angel left her. I find kind of the contrast of this story to the previous one with Zechariah and Elizabeth quite fascinating. It's the same angel Gabriel appearing to both Mary and Zechariah, but the angel begins his conversation to Zechariah by saying, "Your prayers have been heard." We hear there that Mary and Zechariah have been praying and waiting and longing for this child. But here the angel just said, "Greetings, favored one." There's no indication that Mary was praying for a special role in God's kingdom, in his big plan, just that she was chosen by God. We also see that Zechariah was in the temple when he had his encounter, and there's actually nothing mentioned here about where Mary was at this time of the meeting. Again, just a simple girl in a small town. Very little detail, very little context. But we could anticipate that she had a plan. She was intending to marry Joseph, we know that. And she probably had some expectations of what her life would look like. Continuing to live her life in Nazareth, being surrounded by family and friends, and hopefully raising children and taking care of her household. She knew what she was going to do, and then all of a sudden, this angel appears and upends any sense of normalcy. So God could have chosen someone without a plan, someone who wasn't betrothed, someone perhaps of nobility, but God sent the angel to Mary. In his book, Hidden Christmas, Tim Keller captures kind of the essence of Jesus' countercultural ways quite well. And he says, Jesus Christ's values are radically different. The world values pedigree, money, race, and class. He turns all of that upside down. These things that matter so much outside of Jesus' church must not be brought inside. He says, in a sense, in my family, those things that are so important out there in the world must not be so important. I was struck that we see God beginning his greatest work, bringing his most precious son into the world in such a small place with such a small, arguably insignificant woman. Then Mary asked the angel, how will this be? I mean, she knows she's a virgin. She knows she has these plans. And actually, more significantly, she probably knows that this invitation that she's receiving is going to cause her a lot of strife. In that day, the concept that she would be pregnant out of wedlock would have not been looked on quite favorably. Joseph was in his rights, as we heard from the story and reflection last week on Joseph, to divorce her, to leave her. And so she knew that this invitation would likely make her quite vulnerable. So I think on the one hand, there's this fear, trepidation, and likely anxiety, but also honor and this sense of wonder that she is getting this really special invitation. We see here that she didn't actually demand a full understanding, but was kind of trying to absorb what this would look like for her. I am the Lord's servant. May it be to me as you have said. Some translations say there at the end, may your word to me be fulfilled, or may everything you have said about me come true. So, amidst what I'm sure is a mix of emotions, Mary expresses willingness, and God shows us, again, as he often does, that he works through very ordinary people in many unexpected ways. So let's take a look. I'm wanting to unpack a little bit about what Mary's example here can teach us about God. I'm sure there's a few things that stood out to you, and I just want to highlight a few that stood out to me. Firstly, he chooses the unlikely. As I said, by societal standards, Mary wouldn't have been the expected candidate to conceive and raise the Son of the Most High. But as we've been seeing, the narrative of Jesus' birth story is filled with simple people being invited into an incredibly significant story. We heard that last week. We were talking about the shepherds, and previously when we heard about Joseph. These are simple people being given roles of prominence, and it flips kind of our expectations about cultural standards upside down. We see this concept reaffirmed later on in 1 Corinthians 26 to 29. Paul writes here, but God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose weak things of the world to shame the strong. Mary's example reminds us that we shouldn't disqualify ourselves. Secondly, he invites your yes. God actually doesn't call us to have particular gifts or abilities. He is looking for us to be faithful with what we do have and who we are. For me, often the invitations of God don't sound so dramatic. I've never had an encounter with an angel, but it's often those quiet nudges from God inviting me to maybe say hello to someone, to give a smile, to have that tough conversation. It's about trusting God with what he's inviting us into and saying yes. Micah 6:8 writes, "What does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." Number three, I think this shows us that he meets us in our mess. This concept, for me, is much easier said than done. I think we often think, oh, I need to get A, B, and C sorted before I can then do this thing that I feel like God might be calling me to, or before I can kind of put myself out there for something. But actually, here in this story, there's no kind of pretense. There's no, once you do all of these things, then I will give you this incredible opportunity. It actually works the opposite way. God says, here, I invite you into my story. And he looks for us to just be willing to journey with him, even though it might be quite complicated. Romans 8:26 actually reminds us that the Spirit helps us in our weakness. So I want to invite you actually to think about, if something is disrupting your plans, perhaps pause and pray. Lord, is there an opportunity here? And lastly, God honors small bravery. A professor named Nancy Duff wrote that God does not encounter Mary or any of us as ideals. We are like Mary, real human beings of flesh and spirit, body and soul, in need of the power of God as we seek to give glory to the one who saves and sustains us in grace. Mary, like all of us, was called not into perfection, but actually into discipleship. We are called in this world to real tasks, not ideal ones. Mary was going to have to push against all the norms of her society, and God honored her bravery, and she actually gets this amazing front row seat, an opportunity to see all that Jesus was, that he did for his people. So I wonder if there is something that you feel like God might be calling you to that might feel complicated or risky. Maybe pray about if there's a step you could be taking there. So again, he chooses the unlikely. He invites your yes. He meets you in the mess. And he honors small bravery. For those of you who don't know, before I became a mom, I spent about 12 years working in the international development space. And through that work, I've had the incredible opportunity to sit with mothers and children in both their joyful moments, but also incredibly hard ones, women who are vulnerable to disease and experiencing the hardships of war or conflict. And I've seen how complicated it is to be a mother in different spaces around the world. When I read Mary's story now, I see so many parallels. There's uncertainty, limited resources, and very little sense of control over what comes next. But I see again now, with fresh eyes, that trusting in God in the middle of complicated scenarios is an invitation that he offers. We have a chance to say yes, and we also have a chance to say no. These stories and experiences that I have reminded me that the courage Mary shows actually isn't unique to her alone. God is still meeting women and families in the midst of their uncertainty. He's honoring quiet faithfulness in places that the world often overlooks. That's both abroad, but also here. So, I want to now invite you to think back to that dream job, the attributes and characteristics that you were kind of putting aside and thinking, this is what I'm going to bring to that job interview that's going to help me get it. I want to ask, did any of you highlight the word in your mind, ordinary? What about simple? I'm going to venture to guess, maybe not. But actually, Mary's example here shows us that that's all that God is looking for. A humble servant, being willing to say yes. So as we head into this third week of Advent, I want to invite you to think about what's one small, simple step that you can take today to respond to the way that God has created you. Perhaps that means putting yourself out there for that dream job. I don't know. Or maybe it's just a role in the community that you were nervous to kind of put your hand up for, but you're willing to do that. Maybe it's just kind of pushing yourself out of that shy shell and saying hello to somebody in the store or walking down the street. God's not looking for us to have all the pedigree, all of the skills. He's just looking for that willing servant. So I mentioned at the beginning of our time that Mark and I now have a son, Malachi. And this is our first time as a family of three, so we're really trying to soak up the spirit of the season. And although my life looks very different, I'm not traveling to countries around the world, I find myself actually spending quite a bit of time in the library. I'm realizing that books these days are bringing me to different places with different ideas. And so, last week I was at the library and trying to mix it up for Malachi and I, and came across this book called The Christmas Fox. And I just... going to read that to close our time together. Now, I do feel like I should caveat this by saying there is no fox in the Christmas story, but I do think this little fox gives us a sense of the opportunity that God is inviting us into. So I'm going to read this for us. The Christmas Fox by Annick McGrory. Come, drummed the woodpecker, a baby is coming. There's work to be done, there's news to spread. But the little fox stayed to dance with the snowflakes. Come, lowed the cow, a baby is coming. There's a place to make warm with sweet-smelling hay. But the little fox stayed to splash in the stream. Come, bleated the lamb. There are gifts to get ready with soft, cozy wool. But the little fox rolled in the cold, snappy snow. Come, whistled the bluebird. There are songs to sing the baby to sleep. But the little fox stayed to pounce in the snowdrifts. Come, whispered the stars. There is light to shine to brighten the path. But the little fox had no light to shine. He had no song to sing. He had no soft wool to collect, no warm home to share. Come, said the donkey. Just come. It is enough. So the little fox came into the warm, glowing stable. And the little fox brought joy. And the baby smiled. Come, said the donkey. Just come. It is enough. Would you pray with me? Father God, we thank you that you work through ordinary people in these unexpected ways. Thank you that we don't have to work or earn for your love. And thank you for the gift of your son, Jesus. I pray that we would be encouraged by Mary's example. May it remind us that we don't need to have it all together to contribute to building your kingdom here on earth. And may we here at Westside be a people holding our hands and hearts open to you and the ways that you are leading us. As the donkey said, may we just come before you as that starting place and trust that it's enough. Amen.